imagine a document, right? And it isn't a schematic for a new skyscraper or, you know, a city plan or even a political manifesto.
Right.
It's a literal cosmic blueprint for the biological and spiritual upgrade of the entire human race. I mean, today we are opening up a text that asks you to look at the ground beneath your feet and realize it's not a rock spinning in a cold vacuum. It is a massive, breathing, awakening organism.
It is, it's the absolute definition of a conceptual paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Whether you approach a text like this as literal prophecy or, you know, a profound psychological metaphor, or simply as this wildly visionary work of philosophy, it offers a deeply fascinating lens on human evolution. I mean, it takes all the noise of our current world.
It's the endless politics, the anxiety.
No, exactly, the hum of the machines.
Yeah.
And it asks us to look beneath it. To sense a pulse older than time itself.
So welcome to a very special deep dive. We are exploring an extraordinary and deeply esoteric document today. It's titled the I.A. Moen Cosmic Blueprint, 12th October, 2025. And okay, let's unpack this, because our mission today is to synthesize this massive text.
And it is massive.
Oh, it's incredibly dense. We are going to extract its core philosophies about human ascension, cosmic laws, and a radical restructuring of human society. And we're going to try to do it without getting lost in all the dense spiritual terminology.
Right, because it's easy to get bogged down in that.
Very easy. We want to be your shortcut to understanding a really complex perspective on how our inner consciousness might literally physically shape the outer world.
I think the central thesis here is that the Earth is stirring from a long sleep.
Okay.
The blueprint asks us to conceptualize this not as a change of physical seasons, but as a change of soul. Imagine, you know, mountains breathing, rivers shimmering with a completely new intention. The foundational idea is that humanity and the Earth are not separate entities at all.
We aren't just living here.
Right. We are not tenants living on a landlord's property. We form a single, unified living organism.
Which brings us to the name of the document itself, I-A-M-O-N, I Am One World Nation. Now, the text makes it very clear that this is not a country.
No borders.
Right. You aren't going to find IMON on a globe. It doesn't have physical borders. It has no strict dogma, no government, no passports. Instead, the blueprint defines it as the, quote, memory of a truth long buried.
A memory that we are all part of, this brighter octave of being. And the text points to two specific historical sparks that supposedly lit up the horizon to initiate this entire blueprint.
Right. The documents.
Yeah. The first is referred to as the True Constitution of 2020, which it calls a God proclamation for the human spirit.
Wow.
It frames this as a promise that freedom doesn't begin in the courts. It begins strictly within. And then the second spark is the Declaration for the Freedom of Humanity of 2022, which apparently widened that internal promise into a planetary invitation.
I mean, I find it so compelling that it frames these recent years, which, let's be real, for most of the globe, were defined by lockdowns, immense political division, and just a baseline of constant fear.
Global anxiety.
Right. But it frames those years as these hidden, catalytic moments of spiritual declaration. It argues these documents weren't written for governments to ratify. They were written for the soul. They sounded a note of resonance.
And resonance is really the foundational currency of this entire worldview. The argument here is that this new vibration spreads unerringly. Like, people begin to sense it in entirely unexpected ways.
How so? Like, physically?
Yeah, exactly. Some might feel it as a physical quickening in their own bodies, a sort of subtle radiance behind ordinary perception. While others might just feel it as a sudden, intense intolerance for the old ways of living. But the ultimate goal of this resonance is what the blueprint calls ascension.
And here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Because normally when you hear the word ascension in esoteric or spiritual circles, it sounds like an escape hatch.
Right, the evacuation plan.
Yeah, it has this beam me up energy, like, you know, the world is an irredeemable mess, taxes are too high, traffic is terrible, so I'm just going to meditate until I float away into a higher dimension and leave the physical plane behind.
It's often treated exactly like that as an evacuation.
But this blueprint is the total opposite of that. It states emphatically that ascension is participation.
Yes.
It is not an escape from physical reality. The claim is that everything rises together. It literally says stones, rivers, animals, and angels all ascend in tandem.
It is a deeply grounded mysticism. The philosophy insists that matter itself is holy.
Uh-huh.
The physical world isn't a prison to be transcended and discarded. It is a canvas meant to be elevated. Humanity, which has spent thousands of years dividing itself by borders and beliefs, is invited to become a single luminous species again.
Oh.
And the text uses a highly specific, very unusual phrase to describe this new human.
Oh, boy. I know what you're going to say.
It calls it the emergence of the new Adam and Lilith Kidman race, where the pattern of wholeness finally awakens within matter.
Okay, wait. We cannot just glaze over that phrase. When I first read Adam and Lilith Kidman race, it completely stopped me in my tracks.
It's definitely jarring.
It is such a bizarre and specific combination of esoteric terms. Let's really pull this apart for the listener, because we have Adam, which traditionally represents the first man, the foundational template of physical human form.
Right.
Then we have Lilith. And in esoteric traditions, Lilith is often understood as the first woman before Eve, representing this raw, unbridled, sovereign, feminine energy that, you know, just refuses to be subjugated.
She represents the untamed spirit, the aspect of humanity that refuses to be lesser than.
Right. And then we have the addition of Kidman, which is fascinating. Perhaps it's pointing to the new kid or the new humanity, the child born of this perfectly merged, uncompromising masculine and feminine wholeness.
Yeah. Whatever the exact lineage of the term within the author's tradition, the core message seems to be the uniting of spirit and matter into a completely non-binary, fully realized pattern of being. We aren't just half creatures anymore. We are complete.
Okay, but what's fascinating here is the societal shift this profound internal completeness implies. The text breaks down a massive transition from our current society, which it ruthlessly describes as being driven by false authorities whose entire operating motto is to control.
Yes.
To a new society based purely on resonance and circles of collaboration. It envisions networks of hearts and minds aligned with a shared vision where the old rigid structures of hierarchical power just naturally dissolve.
It says, decisions arise naturally as if whispered by the earth herself.
Which, on paper, sounds incredibly poetic. It sounds like a beautiful utopia. But practically speaking, I have to push back hard here.
Go for it.
How does a society actually function with, as the text claims, no rulers and no ruled? If authority just belongs to resonance, isn't that a recipe for absolute chaos?
I mean, from our current viewpoint, it sounds like it.
Right. If there's no law, no police force, no one in charge, what happens when my resonance tells me to take my neighbor's car?
So if we connect this to the bigger picture the text is painting, we really have to understand their definition of resonance. In the framework of this blueprint, they're absolutely not talking about anarchy.
Okay.
They were talking about a higher intrinsic order. The argument is that when individuals truly align with a shared, loving, divine vision, when that internal Adam and Lilith wholeness is achieved, the need for external coercive law completely dissolves.
Because the internal compass is just that strong.
Precisely. To understand it, think of human biology. Look at the cells in a healthy liver.
Okay.
They don't need a dictator in the brain micromanaging their every single function. The brain isn't threatening the liver cells with imprisonment if they fail to filter toxins.
That's a great point.
Right. The cells have an intrinsic coded resonance. They naturally self-regulate, they repair themselves, and they collaborate flawlessly because they know they are part of a larger living organism of unity.
Mm.
The blueprint is simply applying this biological reality to human sociology. It argues that once we remember we are literal cells in the body of the earth, cooperation isn't something that has to be enforced at gunpoint. It becomes our natural, effortless state of being.
That biological analogy actually makes a lot of sense, but it forces a new question. If humanity is functioning like cells in a massive planetary body, what is powering it? A body needs blood. It needs an electrical nervous system.
Exactly.
There has to be an energy source keeping all of this alive and giving it direction.
And this brings us to the blueprint's map of energy. The text outlines a conceptual geography, not of land masses, but of cosmic forces. It states there are three immense currents flowing through the life of the planet, and these three currents form the architecture of the divine mind of Earth.
Okay, let's break these three currents down, because the way the text describes them is incredibly vivid. The first current rises from a center known as Shambhala.
Yeah, Shambhala.
The text describes this as the hidden heart of will. It moves like lightning. It ignites massive transformation, and it is governed by an archetypal presence carrying the tone of will, which the text calls the Manu.
The defining characteristic of this first current, Shambhala, is that it is a raw, unmitigated, almost terrifying force.
Terrifying.
Yeah, the blueprint states that it liberates through destruction. It burns away stagnation. When the current of Shambhala touches human civilization, empires tremble, institutions collapse, and old systems are turned to ash. It is pure driving purpose.
Okay. Then we have the second current, which flows from something called the spiritual hierarchy. And if Shambhala is this raw, terrifying will, the hierarchy is divine love.
Right.
The text describes these as invisible teachers and guardians. They move gently, like breath. Their job is to turn that raw revelation into service. They are the inspiration behind the healers, the true scientists, the artists. And this current is governed by the tone of love, which the blueprint identifies as the archetype of the universal Christ consciousness.
This second current is the melody behind every act of genuine goodwill. Its cosmic function is to soften the blinding lightning of Shambhala into a frequency that humanity can actually integrate without being destroyed by it.
It buffers it.
Exactly. It translates purpose into compassion.
Which perfectly sets up the third current. Humanity itself. We are the third force.
Yes, we are.
We are the living bridge where the fires of spirit actually meet the density of matter. We are the current of intelligent activity. When we build, when we speak truth, when we invent or dream, we are conducting this immense cosmic power into the physical realm. And this third current is governed by the Mahajan, an archetype carrying the tone of active intelligence.
The synthesis of these three is quite profound when you step back. You have will giving direction, love giving motive, and intelligence giving expression. Shambhala acts as the head, the spiritual hierarchy acts as the heart, and humanity acts as the throat or the hands of the planetary being.
Yeah.
It takes the ancient esoteric maxim of as above, so below, and frames it not as a nice piece of poetry, but as the literal functional geometry of life.
Let me use an analogy to make sure we're really grounding this because it's a massive concept. Think of these three currents like a planetary electrical circuit.
Okay, I like that.
Shambhala, that first current of will, is the raw power station. It is a nuclear reactor generating massive, dangerous, high-voltage electricity. If you plug your kitchen toaster directly into a nuclear power plant, the toaster instantly explodes. It cannot handle the raw force.
The intention is there, but the vehicle is totally obliterated.
So you absolutely need the spiritual hierarchy, the second current of love. They act as the massive transformer grid outside your city.
Yeah.
They take that terrifying, destructive voltage of divine will and they step it down. They soften it. They make it safe and loving.
Wow.
And then finally, you have humanity, the third current of intelligence. We are the toaster. We are the light bulb. We are the physical mechanism, the appliance, where that invisible energy actually does the work in the material world. We turn the invisible current into tangible light and heat.
That is an excellent visualization of the interplay. Without humanity, the intention of the cosmos remains abstract. It has no physical expression.
Yeah.
But without the hierarchy acting as a buffer, the raw will of the cosmos would be far too destructive for the physical plane to endure.
Okay, but this exact point brings me to a huge point of contention.
Okay, let's hear it.
The blueprint says that this first current, Shambhala, liberates through destruction. It makes empires tremble. It burns away what can no longer hold light. And the text explicitly calls this destruction mercy.
Yes, it does.
I'm sorry, but to a normal person on the ground living through the collapse of an empire, the loss of their currency or the destruction of their societal systems usually feels like absolute tragedy. It feels like chaos and violence, not mercy. How does the text justify calling destruction a merciful act?
This raises an important question, and it's one the text approaches with a very macroscopic, almost ruthless clarity. The blueprint asserts that divine purpose does not cater to individual destinies or personal comfort.
It's looking at the big picture.
Exactly. It serves the evolution of the whole species. From the perspective of a single green leaf, the arrival of autumn is a tragedy. The leaf loses its life supply, falls to the ground, and rots. But from the perspective of the tree, autumn is mercy.
Right.
It is the absolutely necessary withdrawal of energy so the tree can survive the freezing winter and bloom again in the spring.
So it's removing what can no longer hold light to prepare the soil for renewal. It's pulling the energy back from the dead branches.
Precisely. The text isn't advocating for human cruelty. It says this current crumbles systems not out of cruelty, but out of mercy. Because a system built on false premises will eventually crush the human spirit. It is the force that breaks up the concrete so the buried sea can finally push through to the sun.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
And what's crucial to understand is that the text claims this current of destruction and renewal is aggressively active right now. The concrete is breaking. And the reason for this immense upheaval is that we are standing at the threshold of a massive cosmic transition.
We are moving out of one astrological age and into another. According to the blueprint, humanity is poised right now between the ebbing tide of Pisces and the dawning of Aquarius.
The shift from the Piscean Age to the Aquarian Age is really the engine driving this entire document. The text defines the outgoing Paean Age as an era of faith, an era defined by devotion to leaders, to external gods, and to immense institutions.
Like top-down structures.
Yes. It was an era that built great religions and mighty empires, but as the blueprint notes, it also inherently bound the human spirit. It required intermediaries. You needed a priest, a politician, or a guru standing between you and the truth.
Basically, the Paean Age was entirely about looking outside of yourself for salvation, looking up to a king on a throne. But the Aquarian Age, which the text says we are painfully birthing right now, is the exact opposite.
Completely opposite.
It is the age of direct knowing. The light doesn't descend from above in the form of a savior. It rises from within the individual. The text says this new age literally activates hidden memory codes in the human body.
It describes this activation as a shimmer that passes through the mind when it finally realizes its own infinite nature. And this internal shift completely reframes how the blueprint asks us to view historical trauma.
How so?
Well, the text demands that humanity move beyond blame, beyond victimhood, and beyond the childish binary of punishment and reward. It views even the most horrific global wars of history as passages of planetary initiation.
That is heavy.
It is. The argument is that these incredibly dark periods prove that the human spirit is ultimately indestructible. What was once viewed as pointless tragedy becomes the stark testimony that humanity is capable of endless rebirth.
That is a staggering concept, asking people to recontextualize global trauma as a necessary planetary initiation. But it ties directly into this idea that the teachers of light no longer descend as untouchable gods to be worshipped. The text says they walk among us now as friends and mentors.
Right.
And this brings us to what might be the most radical practical shift in the entire document, how we communicate. The blueprint states that as we enter Aquarius, human speech itself will gradually give way to a pure form of sharing, which it calls telepathy.
Telepathy. But defined here not as a cheap sci-fi trick where you invade someone's privacy, but as the communion of thought and love unspoken.
Wait, if human consciousness becomes entirely transparent and unified, we have to talk about the terrifying implications of this? The text says speech will give way to telepathy and only the sincere will be heard.
Right.
Imagine sitting on a crowded subway and every petty, anxious, judgmental, or dark thought you have is instantly broadcast to everyone around you and you can hear theirs. Human thoughts are chaotic. A world without psychological secrets sounds like an absolute nightmare, not a spiritual utopia. That terror is a very natural reaction to the concept of telepathy from our current state of consciousness. But the text provides a crucial, non-negotiable prerequisite for this shift to occur. It emphasizes the absolute necessity of stillness, and it defines this not as retreating to a cave, but as the stillness of clarity.
What does the stillness of clarity actually look like in practice? How do you clear the psychological baggage that makes telepathy so terrifying?
The blueprint is suggesting an evolutionary leap. It argues that in a world without secrets, truth must literally become our native tongue. You cannot harbor fear, malice, or deception if your mind is a transparent transmitter.
Okay, I see.
The terror you're feeling about the subway scenario comes entirely from the ego's desire to hide its contradictions and its shame. The text proposes that before telepathy becomes the norm, the human mind will be so purified of the illusion of separation that there will be absolutely nothing left to hide.
So no more petty judgments on the subway.
Exactly. Your internal thoughts become a pure, unblemished broadcast of goodwill. If your internal climate is perfectly clear, telepathy isn't a violation. It is the ultimate intimacy and the ultimate efficiency.
So telepathy only activates once the psychological shadows that make it scary have been completely integrated and cleared out. But think about the physical implications of this. If human consciousness is evolving this drastically, if our minds are becoming transparent transmitters and we realize we are cells in a single body, the physical infrastructure of our world becomes entirely obsolete.
Completely obsolete.
A telepathic unified species isn't going to be fighting over border walls, and they certainly aren't going to be running their civilization on coal power and internal combustion engines.
Which is exactly why the blueprint moves from the evolution of consciousness directly into a vision for a radical new science. The text reveals there are three great discoveries waiting for human genius, which it beautifully calls gifts from the next octave. These three sciences are the mastery of energy, the revelation of light, and the understanding of sound.
Let's explore the mastery of energy first. The text says we will realize that the power of the atom is not meant to be a weapon, but a bridge to true freedom.
Right.
It claims that when energy is harnessed in harmony with spiritual law rather than against it, this energy will dissolve scarcity entirely. Abundance will flow as naturally as breath, and human work will transition from survival toil to pure creation.
Consider the implications of that for a moment. Right now, our entire global infrastructure is based on the management and monetization of scarcity. Oil, gas, clean water, they hold value because they are limited.
Exactly.
But if energy becomes boundless and freely available through this new science, the foundational assumption of human struggle is entirely removed from the equation.
Which fundamentally alters human behavior. Yeah. If you aren't fighting to survive, you have room to evolve. Then there is the second discovery, the revelation of light. This one is wild.
It really is.
The blueprint claims that human vision will literally undergo a biological upgrade to extend beyond the currently visible spectrum. It says we will learn to visually see the subtle auras or energy fields of color that surround every living thing. And the implication of this isn't just a cool light show, it's a sociological revolution.
Yes.
The text argues that race and creed divisions will fade because we will undeniably see all beings as variations of one single brilliant light.
This is a vital point in the blueprint. These scientific advancements are framed not just as technological upgrades, but as biological agents of moral evolution. Think about it. If you can physically see the radiant life force pulsing in another person, prejudice becomes biologically impossible.
Right, because you see the truth of them immediately.
You aren't just politely believing in unity. You are witnessing it optically. The illusion of separation is shattered by the eye itself.
It's like upgrading humanity to see in spiritual infrared. You see the truth of a person's soul long before you register their skin color or the clothes they're wearing. And finally, the third discovery is the understanding of sound, recognizing that vibration actually shapes matter.
This one is fascinating.
The text says sound will be known as the instrument of divine creation. The literal waveform arises in the physical universe.
We can see the very early stages of this today in cymatics.
Oh, right, with the sand.
Exactly. The study of visible sound, where specific frequencies create incredibly intricate, perfect geometric patterns in sand or water. The text is taking that basic physical principle to a cosmic level. It suggests that humanity will eventually learn to consciously participate in building the physical world through sacred tone and vibration. We will literally sing the new world into existence.
That's incredible.
These three sciences, energy, light, and sound, aim to unite spirit and matter. They re-enchant the human experience so that in the Aquarian Age, scientific discovery becomes indistinguishable from spiritual devotion.
Okay, I am fully on board with the vision of re-enchanting the world. But practically speaking, let's look at the fallout of this. If scarcity is completely dissolved by this new mastery of boundless energy, our entire current economic structure implodes.
If it does.
Our financial systems, Wall Street, the global banking models, they exist solely to manage scarcity and extract profit from it. If energy and resources are suddenly abundant and free, doesn't the global economy just collapse overnight?
It does. And the blueprint does not shy away from this reality. In fact, it embraces it. The current system cannot survive in an environment of true abundance. But the text provides a very specific timeline, outlining a series of invocations and future dates that mark the collapse of the old system. And crucially, it frames this collapse not as a violent disaster, but as a necessary, almost gentle dissolution.
To understand how this transition happens, we actually have to go backward before we go forward. The blueprint points to a very specific moment in recent history, 1945. According to the text, a specific prayer was given amidst the smoking ashes of World War II that set this entire chain of events into motion.
Yes, 1945. The world was traumatized, fractured, and sitting in literal ashes. The text states that at this moment of peak human desperation, the great invocation was given to humanity.
And how does that start?
It begins with the profound words, "From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men."
The blueprint says this wasn't just a nice poem to make people feel better. It was an active note struck across dimensions. It claims that every single time it was spoken with sincerity, it wove a literal filament of light between the spiritual realms and the physical earth, acting as a living bridge. It seeded the collective human heart with the absolute certainty that what we invoke with love will eventually become our physical world.
And from the continuous rhythm of this living prayer, the text claims the outline of a new world religion began to emerge. But it's very careful to define this. It is not a religion of dogma, priests, or tithing.
Right, none of the Piscean stuff.
Exactly. It is a framework of direct knowing, based on three core truths. First, that a vast spiritual hierarchy of consciousness actively guides evolution. Second, the practical science of invocation learning to cooperate with higher realms. And third, the staggering realization of a living universe where every star, every planet, is a conscious evolving being.
And as these truths begin to anchor into human awareness, the text points a giant arrow toward a specific future year, 2035. It says the years leading up to 2035 mark a profound cycle of balance under the astrological sign of Libra. The concept of justice will be entirely reimagined as restoration and healing, rather than punishment in cages.
And a massive part of this 2035 vision focuses entirely on how we treat children.
Governance, it says, will turn its primary gaze toward the well-being of children, recognizing them as the literal carriers of future light. And the education system will radically expand. The text predicts that by 2035, children won't just learn math and history. They'll be taught the fundamental laws of the soul.
They will learn concepts like rebirth, karma, and the absolute certainty that every single ashen word and thought ripples through the interconnected web of life.
Imagine teaching karma and rebirth as foundational facts in public schools by 2035. That completely reshapes the psychology of a developing child. But I need to pause here because earlier in the blueprint, there is a very serious warning.
Oh, yes.
It says that when a massive outpouring of divine energy entered the human field 2 centuries ago, it inspired incredible visionaries, but it also inflamed human ambition. The text explicitly states, the same current that birthed compassion also birthed tyranny. So if we are heading toward this massive, unprecedented energetic shift in 2035, how do we ensure this new power doesn't just create a new breed of spiritually justified tyrants, people who claim to be wielding divine will just to subjugate others?
That is the eternal danger of power in the physical realm. But the text provides a built-in safeguard for this era. It states a rule. Power itself is innocent. It is the consciousness behind it that determines its path. The blueprint asserts that the ultimate safeguard for the coming Aquarian era is a fundamental shift in human desire. Humanity will shift from seeking personal perfection and personal glory to seeking collective realization. The will of the group naturally replaces the striving of the individual ego. You simply cannot have a spiritual tyrant if the very concept of individual supremacy has been completely replaced by a deep biological drive for group harmony.
The blueprint also mentions a deeper cosmic pattern driving all of this forward, which it calls the geometry of seven, or the septenary rhythm. It touches on 7 rays of energy, 7 centers, 7 paths. But the part we really need to unpack is what it calls the law of the supplementary seven. It defines this as the law of abstraction.
Let's not leave that hanging, because abstraction is a vital concept in this text. In normal conversation, we think of abstraction as something vague, theoretical, or disconnected from reality. But in this blueprint, abstraction is a highly active sacred force. It is the power of deliberate release.
Deliberate release.
It is the sacred art of withdrawing your energy from forms, habits, and systems that no longer serve the light.
It's like the ultimate spiritual Marie Kondoing of the soul.
Exactly. And it's framed not as a death, but as a necessary resurrection. The text uses the profound analogy of a serpent shedding its skin. Humanity must actively shed its worn-out identities, its nationalistic fears, and its rigid separations to reveal the radiant, growing core beneath. The old form dies and flakes away, but the life within is liberated to grow larger.
And this shedding of the old skin isn't just about human-to-human relationships. It extends to our relationship with the planet itself. The text says that as we abstract from our old greed, our circle of compassion will naturally grow to include the animal kingdom.
Yes, this is a beautiful part.
We will shift from treating animals as a commodity, a resource, or something we have dominion over, to viewing them as absolute kin. Empathy will extend across species and across the elements themselves.
Stewardship entirely replaces dominion. We become the caretakers of the garden, not the exploiters of it. But for this incredible vision of 2035 to manifest, for this collective realization and deep harmony with nature to actually take root, the old, entrenched systems of control must be neutralized. And the blueprint makes a fascinating claim here. It says that a major turning point for the neutralization of the old world has already occurred in our very recent history.
Yes. According to the text, a massive energetic shift happened just a few years ago, guided by a very specific esoteric figure, Saint Germain.
Saint Germain is introduced in the text as the primary messenger of the Aquarian Age. The blueprint poetically refers to him as the violet flame of transformation made human. His core foundational message is that true freedom is never granted from an external authority. It must be awakened from within the individual.
And the blueprint makes a really interesting critique of history here. It says that all the past spiritual movements were basically just a rehearsal. Saint Germain teaches that previous movements, even the ones that rose specifically in his name centuries ago, failed to sustain the fire of transformation. Why? Because their followers constantly looked outward for miracles instead of looking inward for mastery.
Right. Yeah.
They treated divine energy like a lightning strike through an ungrounded wire. It was brilliant, it was brief, and then it was gone, leaving nothing but burned out followers waiting for the lightning to strike again.
It is a devastating critique of externalized religion and guru worship. The new unfolding, the text insists, was never meant to be a new organization, a new church, or a new creed. It's meant to be the creation of living organisms of consciousness, groups of everyday souls united not by a rigid hierarchy or a charismatic leader, but by a shared, stable vibration of love.
And the text pinpoints an exact modern date when this new, stable vibration firmly took hold on Earth, April 4th, 2020. It calls this the Global Day of Independence. It says that on this specific day, a new frequency anchored itself deep into the planetary grid. Its purpose wasn't violent destruction. Its purpose was purification.
I want you to think back to April 2020. The entire globe was in unprecedented lockdown. The relentless, grinding machinery of modern society had essentially ground to a total halt.
Yeah, the streets were empty.
The skies cleared of smog, the streets were silent. In the midst of that profound, terrifying silence and global fear, the text claims a massive spiritual pivot occurred behind the scenes. It says that silence allowed a new frequency to anchor, which immediately led to the gentle, inevitable dissolution of all structures that thrive on manipulation and fear.
The blueprint specifically calls out the collapse of shadow technologies and the debt-based financial machinery that keeps humanity enslaved to the clock. But the phrasing it uses for this collapse is fascinating. It says these systems collapse by irrelevance.
The mechanics of this collapse are what make this blueprint so unique. The text is abundantly clear. It is not predicting a violent, bloody revolution. There are no guillotines in the streets, no storming of the Capitol buildings.
Right.
The old systems, the invisible hands that steered global economies, dissolve simply because humanity stops feeding them belief. They starve to death. They become completely irrelevant.
The text mentions the miracles of Jesus in this section, which at first seems out of place, but it uses them to make a brilliant point. It frames his miracles not as magical, rule-breaking suspensions of physics, but as high-level demonstrations of natural law.
Yes, exactly.
It says that when cells remember their divine origin, balance is naturally and instantly restored. And it argues that this exact same cellular restoration extends to human society and the economy. The blueprint outlines a new economic reality where wealth is viewed as a sacrament, where money is simply a language of gratitude, and where giving and receiving are just two beats of the same heart. It even says that taxation is entirely replaced by voluntary generosity.
The vision is that prosperity ceases to be a hoarded privilege and becomes a natural condition of biological alignment. Work is no longer soul-crushing toil for survival, but joyful, creative expression.
Okay, I have to be the skeptic again here. Replacing taxes with voluntary generosity, a financial system based purely on gratitude. I love the immense optimism of this. I really do. But as the text itself admits, fear is a powerful, deeply ingrained contagion. It multiplies in the human psyche faster than any virus. How exactly do we get from our current anxiety-driven, inflation-heavy, fear-based economy to a utopia where everyone just voluntarily gives what is needed? If someone is terrified of starving, their biological imperative is to hoard resources.
Mm.
How does this new economy actually take root in human psychology without everyone just taking advantage of the system?
This is exactly where we have to look closely at Saint Germain's core philosophy as presented in the text. Your world is the mirror of your imagination. The transition the text outlines does not require every single human being to wake up tomorrow and be perfectly generous. It relies on a critical mass of people forming those living organisms of consciousness we mentioned earlier. These small groups of deeply aligned individuals act as powerful tuning forks for the rest of the planet.
So it's a critical mass game, like herd immunity, but for spiritual economics.
That is a perfect way to describe it. When enough people, just a critical mass, firmly hold the frequency of trust and abundance, the fear-based economy loses its energetic fuel. Because in the reality proposed by this blueprint, consciousness is the ultimate foundational currency.
Right.
If a critical mass of humanity simply refuses to operate from a frequency of lack, the massive global systems built on exploiting that lack have nothing to attach to. They wither by irrelevance, just as the text said. The transition happens because a small but powerful portion of humanity redirects its gaze from crisis to potential, from outrage to understanding, and that frequency pulls the rest of the species upward.
Thought held in love becomes light, and light held in faith becomes form. That is the true alchemy of this new era. It really pulls every single thread of this blueprint together into one cohesive mechanism.
It truly does. When you step back and look at the vast entirety of the IMOWN cosmic blueprint, you see that it is ultimately a manifesto for the total democratization of divine power. It declares that the age of mastery has begun. It is looking the reader directly in the eye and saying, "You are no longer a student of the light, hoping to learn about it in a book. You are its literal physical expression."
Humanity is no longer waiting for a savior to descend from the sky to fix our problems. We are the co-creators. We are the cells of the earth waking up and taking responsibility for the health of the body. And the ultimate takeaway from all this dense, beautiful, esoteric material.
The ultimate takeaway, the absolute foundational law that underpins every single claim, every prophecy, and every scientific revelation in this blueprint, is that consciousness is causation.
Consciousness is causation.
Yes. The outer physical world is merely the echo of the inner world. Every healed heart, every moment of clear, loving intention, literally, mathematically reshapes the geometry of matter. The kingdom of heaven doesn't fall from the sky. It emerges upward from the ground of human awareness itself.
Consciousness is causation. That is incredibly powerful. We want to thank you for taking this deep dive with us today into the IMWN Cosmic Blueprint. We've covered the three cosmic currents, the terror and beauty of telepathy, the dissolution of the dead economy, and the literal awakening of the Earth herself.
It is a vast, challenging, and profoundly beautiful vision of the future. It asks us to completely reevaluate our relationship to power, our relationship to each other, and our relationship to the living planet beneath our feet.
And before we go, I want to leave you with one final lingering thought. A provocation inspired directly by the text we just spent the last hour exploring. The blueprint claims that the elements, the weather, and our massive, unyielding societal structure are all just mirrors, perfectly reflecting the collective, hidden thoughts of humanity. So, as you go about your day-to-day, as you look at the news, check your bank account, or just watch the people around you, ask yourself, what secret collective beliefs is the Earth reflecting back to us right now? And more importantly, what entirely new reality could you help build simply by changing the frequency of your own thoughts today?
Until next time.